The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 13th of March, 2020. On the podcast today, Kieran Rosaria, Chief Executive Officer of Cadence Minerals, KDNC is ticker there, and Cadence provides an update on the different parts of the business, including their Amapa iron ore project in Brazil. Also on the podcast, Zero Ciccone, CEO of Zaim Credit Systems, ZAIM is ticker there, and Ciro discusses operational progress at the Russian-focused FinTech Microloans Group. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And there's an interesting mix here, actually. And the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, if you want to see top 10 versions of both these lists, go to voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kieran Rosaria, Chief Executive Officer of Cadence. That's KDNC ticker. Kieran, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure as always, Justin.
Now, you've had a bit of news out. You've had news out today. You've had news out yesterday. And so we'll dig into that in a bit. And you've also been buying some stock in the big dip yesterday. The massive dip, actually. Heck of a sell-off. Before we do, as always, Kieran, for people not familiar with Cadence Minerals, could you just summarise what the business is about, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So Cadence Minerals is an investment company. We've got investments across both lithium and rare earth minerals. And more recently, we've been focusing our efforts on an exciting investment in the Amapa iron ore project in Brazil. So those are our key investments. And we've got some other iron ore assets in Australia as well.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's go into that bit of news on the big project you've got going on, really, and I suppose the massive upside potential here is the Amapa iron ore project in Brazil. Now, you're progressing this nicely, and so you give us an update. What's happened here?
Well, just basically, it's a generalized update to keep shareholders updated because of when we talked about this asset, our idea was to say that once we get our 20% stake in this, quite amazing asset, when it was owned by Anglo American, they valued their 70% stake at about $462 million, so about 600 million at 100%. So we're going to get a 20% stake by investing $2.5 million, and then we'll go up to 27 by investing a further $3.5 million, and then we have a first right of refusal to go up to 49%. To be clear, our $2.5 million has all been raised and it's sitting in escrow. And to protect our shareholders and the company against the downside of effectively, preconditions not being met, licenses not being granted, we put in a series of mitigation measures. And those were, for us to release our $2.5 million, firstly, we need to have the railway concession granted. That was granted on December 9th last year, after we got the judicial restructuring approval on August the 30th. And then we did anticipate that we would hopefully get the banks over the line by the end of December and then start shipping iron ore from stockpile. Unfortunately, that's not been the case. The banks have been taking time. It's been a fairly lengthy negotiations, partly because we're dealing with a consortium of four banks, one of which is a state bank of India. The other is an Italian bank based in Milan. So these issues have just taken a bit longer to get all people coordinated and get towards an agreed position. And on top of that, we are offering a discount to what they are owed. We want to ensure that we get the best value, and that's taken a bit longer, and we will continue to negotiate and we'll continue to drive and get the best value for us as shareholders. So that's what we're doing, and what we're going to do is once we've got to a finalized agreement, we'll announce that to market, and that then triggers the most important sort of sequence of events. That means as soon as that's happened, we can start shipping, or the port, the state of Amapa will allow us to start operations at port and start shipping iron ore. And that's 1.4 million tons of iron ore. given that, depending on the quality of iron ore, it's about $90 for 62% iron ore and $100 for about 65% oil. That's a substantial value that can be utilized in the development of the project and the payment of these of the bank creditors. So, yes, it's just a standard update of what we're going to be doing. And once we start shipping the iron ore, we can then start the whole redevelopment with the idea of, from that point, within 2 years, bring the whole project back into first mining from the the mine, and shipping from the port, eventually at 6 million tons a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to put you in a corner and ask you when it's going to happen, but rough ballpark, any ideas? And like I say, you can say here we don't know, it's out of our hands, but have you any idea of time frame wise on this?
I think I've been asked that many times, and I think by providing any answer could actually prejudice our negotiations with the bank. So yeah. I'm not going to provide anything right now. I think that's not the right way to approach it. As we said, once we have it signed, we will announce it.
But you're quite optimistic on the progress you're making with them, yeah?
Yes, we are optimistic because, I suppose it's sort of it's my reflection of Bikes, which is the company, is a reflection of that optimism. I am optimistic in doing so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah, yeah. Exactly. I mean, yesterday you did dip into the market, like I said, when everyone was saying, don't buy now, it's going lower. And, the entire global financial system was going to hell in a handcart. Fair play, you did jump into the market and purchase some shares. So that's good there. What was your thought? I mean, was that a pre-planned buy, or did you just see the dip and just go for it?
No, I think I was always wanting to buy some more shares, and it was important that I did so, and I had to make sure that the market was cleansed, so providing this update was important, so that allowed me to do so, so it wasn't opportune, it was a planned part for me to buy some shares in the company once we had cleansed it, and this was an opportune point to cleanse it. And to show confidence to shareholders that, I am invested in this company. I've invested somewhere over the period of time that I've invested in the order of £85,000 into the company. And I'm looking to, show that I am aligned with shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, you've just had another update come out just now, and about MacArthur Minerals Lake Charles Iron Project. Give us the details on that, if you could, Kieran.
Yeah, so Lake Giles is one of our other iron ore assets. So we invested in this quite a while ago. This is under MacArthur Minerals. We've got about 4% in the company at the moment. And in essence, they are at the stage of completing their feasibility study. Their feasibility study is the study that they need to do and complete to finance the project. And they're just basically updating the market, saying, right, we now have some really great results from the XRF. And they're also providing I think it's important that Cameron has really provided real context. Despite this coronavirus, despite, all these things, the actual iron ore price has stayed strong. It's still remained as a commodity. It's still above November last year's pricing of $72 a ton. As I mentioned beforehand, 62% iron ore is at $90 and 65% is at $100. And those are really quite important. I think also the flip side of that, if you look at the Baltic Index, shipping prices have dropped down quite considerably over this period, due to China being effectively shutting down for large parts of it in the manufacturing sector. Iron ore has remained robust. And, I can see now with China's flattened curve coming out, and we will see their recovery in terms of people and slowly going back to work, we will see an increase in their production. And they've already announced a fairly substantial economic stimulus, which undoubtedly will go into infrastructure and building. And guess what? That's going to mean a surge in iron ore and increasing prices there. So there is a macro story here that really will work for iron ore in our investments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, all right. Well, listen, as always, if someone's listening right now, it's the sound of the progress you're making here, but are not yet following the story, then give them three quick reasons in summary why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yep, the first reason, AMAPA. AMAPA is a project that was owned by Anglo American, had a, when was valued about $600 million. Our entry, we've mitigated the risk through our deal structuring. It already has a resource. It already has a port. It already has a mine. It already has a railway. They need rehabilitating. And we're getting in there for 27% for effectively $6 million. So assuming that we can execute and deliver this project, you know, there's substantial upside for there. We also have, as I just said, MacArthur Minerals. We've got 4% of that. That's another iron ore story, which is going through the sort of advanced development stage. And we also have other stakes, like we have a stake in Sinovec, which is the EMH lithium story, which, you know, we've got around 16% in that. And that also is in the feasibility study. And it's got a very strong partner in CEZ, who looks like they've got under the doing the due diligence to invest into that project and take 50% of it. So we've got a suite of mineral resource assets that are what we'll call an advanced stage. And one of which is a MAPA, which if we get what we say get done on the tin, which is effectively get the banking banking covenants and the banking deal done, we will be started shipping, and therefore that's very close revenue. As soon as you get that done, you can start shipping and generating revenue.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. And of course, you know, worth looking at your current valuation. Like you say, it's not nailed on by any means at the moment, but it's transformational. Even one project, isn't it, to your valuation?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Marvellous stuff, Kerry. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sira Ciccone, Chief Executive Officer of Zaim Credit Systems. Z-A-I-M is ticker. Sira, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you very much for your invitation.
Now, before we get into how progress is with the company, for people not familiar, and you're quite new to the market, your company here, so give us a brief summary. What is Zaim Credit Systems, please, Ciro?
Oh, Zaim Credit Systems is basically a fintech platform that is providing microfinance and microfinance services to lowest segment of population in at the moment in Russia, but in the future we will see other countries. We provide micro loans. Yep. Average ticket is £90 for a very limited duration of 30 to 40 days average.
Honestly.
And we do this from 6 years with a very, very good performance, especially in the last 24 months.
Okay, and so why Russia specifically?
Well, why Russia? Russia has been one of the very first countries in Europe, I consider Russia Europe, which has created a very, very clean and transparent legislation for the microfinance market. Once I studied it, I decided to start funding the project when I was not yet a shareholder, but just a lender. And then I decided to take over, given certain changes in regulation framework. And in this moment, I can say that and what I say has been verified by the FCA bodies during the IPO, that Russia is an extremely transparent environment. We are regulated and controlled and regulated by the central bank, which is extremely professional control. And this gives a lot of comfort for investors that come from Europe. You know, we are happy to say that our company has gone through three very invasive due diligence, one from MasterCard, the one from Central Bank of Russia, and one from the London Stock Exchange bodies. And the result has been that they always found that we are extremely transparent and reliable. Mm-hmm. So that's why Russia, the legislation framework of Russia is very solid.
Yeah. And you mentioned there that it's not a brand new business, it's been going a while. So take us through where you are at the moment.
Okay, the business started 6 years, the company started in late 2011, so now it's almost 9 years. I joined the the product company in 2014, so 6 years ago. And the company went, even thanks to the funding I made from Europe, through a very painful but extremely efficient learning curve. And now we got the achievement to go public on November the 4th on the Standard Market in London Stock Exchange. So what I say is that we look like, and we cost like a startup, but we are a very well experienced and solid company.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the moment, how is business?
At the moment, business is going quite well, in line, a little bit better than what we expected. But this is very important in a moment like this. Our business is completely decorrelated from the economic cycles and from stock market cycles. We work, serve people who have nothing to do and cannot be affected by any macroeconomic or macrofinancial event. In a moment like today, when stock markets are dropping, where all the companies are in preparing profit warnings, we are going quite well, very smooth, a bit better than what we expected. And, you know, we serve unbanked and unbankable people. So there is like a firewall between our clients and the financial system. They have no bank account. Yeah. And this means that their needs is always predictable and their behavior is always, not always, but for us is predictable. And this gives us a very comfortable sweet spot to make our business. So just to answer very synthetically, we're happy of what is happening now for our business.
Yeah. Okay, marvelous stuff. Well, Sarah, if someone's listening right now and likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, please give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, so as I told you, we went floated on November the 4th, and this was like a milestone of a path started 9 years before. And three reasons are, first, resilience. Both our company and the business are quite resilient to any event coming from outside. As I told you, there is no correlation from macroeconomic events or financial market events. Our business is predictable. It's the key point is to be capable to manage the business in its complexity as we are. Growth expectations. At the moment, any investor could enjoy a very cheap price if you look at the potential growth that we have both in Russia and all over the world. This industry is growing fantastically all over the world because you have to consider that the majority of world population is unbankable. And third, the track record. We are 9 years experience company. We have processed close to 2 million transactions between those that we have approved and those that we haven't. And this give us a very, very good performance in all the KPIs that we are showing monthly in our RNSs after any board of director or any significant event that we deem to be disclosed. So these are the three. So I hope that your people will be happy to give a look sometime to our talk.
Thank you very much, sir. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. I would be always glad to join you as soon as you want me to be. Thank you, and see you soon.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Lloyds Banking Group. That's up 6.74%. Of course, a bit of a bounce today. And apparently the American markets are showing a limit up on the futures, which is 5%. But of course, no limit on the actual trading. 39.49 pence, Lloyds. Add for Carnival. That's down today still. In fact, it just went down from minus 5 to minus 1.8. It's $12.65 a share. CCL, Carnival Cruises, of course, they announced they are stopping their cruises for 2 months. 18 cruise ships they've got very soon because of coronavirus, of course. At 3, Premier Oil, up 70%. 7-0, 21.47. It was down. What was it down the other day? It was down over 50%, I think. Well, it's a big drop, anyway. At 2, BP, up 9.62% to £3.01. And the number one most followed company is Finable. Finn is a ticker, by the way. It dropped massively yesterday, about 70%. And the day before that, it's dropped. But today, it's up 208% to 13.9 pence. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, BT Group. They did a COVID-19 update, and BT Group fell to its lowest ever yesterday, even below its IPO price. Where is it at the moment? It's up 8.9%, it's 116. I think it floated 125, I think. There's a lot of things in there, no idea. Okay, at 4, AsiaMet Resources. AsiaMet Business Update, saying things are progressing well there. At 3, UK Oil and Gas, Horse Hill granted long-term production consent. At 2, Clough Natural Resources, update following oil price volatility. And at 1, it's Rehoboam Resources, update on market volatility. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.